This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
Jets dump it in again. Lincoln and out of the goal. Fires it around the far boards. It's sent in front. Kyle Connor scores. Connor for Vilardi. Drops at the Vancouver line for Pionk with a shot stop by Lincoln and rebound. They score. Kyle Connor again.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Myers tried to dump it behind the goal. Cycle was broken by Scheifele, though, who passes to center for Vilardi. Now ahead for Connor. In alone. On a breakaway to the forehand. He scores! It's a first period natural hat trick for Kyle Connor. And it's 3-0 Jets with 6:23 left in the first.
A natty hattie.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks. Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks get throttled in Winnipeg 6-1 against the Jets, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment, Satyar Shah and Dan Riccio. And as always, get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650. We are going to welcome in Randeep Janda into the conversation, fresh off calling this game with Brendan Batchelor. A brutal 6-1 defeat at the hands of the Winnipeg Jets. And, you know, we had talked, Reach, about how ever since that Boston game going back to December 13th, the Canucks have done a pretty good job of avoiding that dud.
Mm-hmm.
And on a night where they had Philip Hronek return after a 20-plus game absence, coming off one of their biggest wins of the season with the odds stacked against them against the Toronto Maple Leafs, they probably had their worst road game of the season tonight in Winnipeg.
It was, by every definition, a stinker by the Canucks. There's no other way around it. Kyle Connor had the hat trick in the first period, and you knew this was not going to be the Canucks night. It's a tough performance. You know, yeah, you had the good one against the Maple Leafs. That doesn't give you the right to walk into Winnipeg and expect that that's just going to continue. You still have to work. You still have to be attention to detail. By all accounts, the Winnipeg Jets are a better team than the Maple Leafs. You got to up your game from where you were on Saturday, and the Canucks were nothing or nowhere close to what they needed to be tonight.
No, they're certainly off the mark in a massive way. Let's welcome in Randeep into the conversation. And Randeep, I mean, the only miracle we saw tonight was Nils Höglander snapping a 34-game goalless drought. Took 35 games to score his third goal of the campaign. But that's as close as the Canucks got tonight. And I get you're going to have bad games. I get, you know, things go against you. But the Canucks just went way too meekly into the night this evening when things went against them.
Yeah, I think the first couple of shifts, guys, as Winnipeg was trying to get their legs in the game, there was Nils Höglander had a chance. Pionk took out his shooting angle. Danton Heinen was set up. There's a stick by Logan Stanley. After that, it was all Winnipeg. There was no positives out to talk about. The Höglander one, sure. On a personal level, you feel like you can score again. So you feel good for Nils Höglander just because he's rediscovered his shooting form, at least on that play. But you know, it starts with that Lankinen giveaway, collides a little bit with Hronek, and Mark Scheifele slows him down getting back to the crease. And then just it started after that. It started an avalanche where there were multiple giveaways in the defensive zone. There were breakdowns in coverage, whether that was Carson Soucy leaving a 2-on-1 in front of the net for Noah Juulsen on that 2-0 goal. There was the 3-0 goal where, you know, JT Miller and Tyler Myers is jumping up into along the wall, and it just feels like JT Miller, you know, kind of floats to the middle of the ice and stops skating, and that leads to the 3-0 goal. It was just breakdown after breakdown in a key moment in the game, and it all, you know, fell sideways for the Vancouver Canucks after that. And I even expected a bit of a response physically or some sort of energy to start off the second period, and we didn't see that either throughout the night. So it was disappointing on many fronts for the Canucks.
Yeah, it's an ugly one. I mean, there's no way around that. When you lose 6-1, it's ugly. And you know, the first goal, of course, you can pin it on Lankinen, but the way I kind of feel about it looking back on it now, it's okay. You know, the goalie that's kept you in so many games, the goalie who's stolen you a few wins here through the first half of the season, one of the biggest reasons you are, you know, even sniffing a playoff spot given the way that they've played through the first half of the season. okay, he made a mistake. You've got to pick him up. Instead, we saw a litany of other mistakes go against the Canucks after that Lankinen an initial mistake put them down behind the eight ball 1-0 early in the first. And, you know, that's just the kind of thing you don't want to see from a team. You want to see them playing for each other, and I don't feel like they did that tonight.
Well, to your point, Reach, even when it was 1-0, there's a giveaway at the offensive blue line, shorthanded for Winnipeg. They're attacking Adam Lowry on a breakaway after Besser tries to push the puck towards the point. It's off target, and who makes the save? It's Kevin Lankinen who ends up making the save as Lowry's trying to go five hole on that play. So, you know, even after that mistake, and I know this was not a good game for Kevin Lankinen, and we can probably talk about some other goals too, but he still, even after that mistake, made some saves, tried to keep his team in it. But I felt, you know, in terms of engaging physically, being first to pucks, and that was one of the strong parts of Vancouver's game against Toronto. They won, 67% of the puck battles on that night. They were always hungry. They were first to pucks. There was a level of energy and commitment. That's the word, commitment, in that game, which really lacked. And if, you know, that first goal and that first mistake dents your confidence, this is a team of absolute sharks, and the Winnipeg Jets, they can attack, and they can attack over and over and over again. That first line showed what they're capable of. We talked about it pregame too. You give them an opportunity, they're going to take it most of the time. And if you show weakness, that's exactly what happened in the first period, where it didn't matter what line was out there against Kyle Connor and his line. They were feasting on the Vancouver, because you could see there was a real lack of confidence in that group, and I would say commitment as well, especially when you compare it to the Toronto game on Saturday night.
Yeah, and that's what's perplexing, right? It's the game in, game out inconsistency. You see them have a great performance unexpectedly, then have an unexpectedly bad performance. And, you know, to be honest, the ups and downs have kind of predominantly been owned by the downs, right? I mean, they've won 19 games on the season so far. They played 43 games. That means they've lost 24 times. Yes, you picked up some loser points, but there are a lot of losses you've taken, right? And here's another one, which is a tough one and a big one. And, you know, as far as how this game unfolded, and we're seeing a lot of this texting in our text inbox. How come the head coach didn't pull the goaltender? Could that have made a change? When you're down 3-0 after the first, should they have gone to Demko maybe?
No, I think with Kevin Lankinen, and listen, he had the shutout last game. You give him, he had one bad goal against him, I would say, especially in that first period. Everything else, you know, off the rush, I see that as a mistake by probably Carson Soucy on the second goal. What's Lankinen supposed to do on that one? That's a free rebound for a highly skilled player to beat you, go wide on you. The 3-0 goal, that's a really another play where your defenseman's up the ice and JT Miller is kind of in no man's land. That's yet again an easy deke for one of the better goal scorers in the league. And at that point, you know, sure, can you make a switch after 20 minutes? I don't think, especially if you have your eye on Thatcher Demko starting on Thursday night against the LA Kings, I would rather see him there. This is a difficult team to come back against when you're down 1-0, guys, let alone 3-0 after 20 minutes. So I don't mind keeping Lankinen in there. You got keeping an eye on Thursday against the LA Kings. This is a tough comeback against the Winnipeg Jets. You know, like I said, with a one-goal deficit, let alone a three-goal deficit with Connor Hellebuyck in net. So going with Lankinen, if your team's going to respond at that point, I think they do it with that goaltender in net. But it's also the onus of the skaters to pick up their game after 20 minutes, and they simply didn't do that.
No, they didn't. And it's becoming more and more interesting. You know, there's so many storylines around this team on and off the ice, and we keep wondering when is Pettersson going to wake up out of this half season, almost a full year slump that he's been in. He was good on Saturday, wasn't as good tonight. And then there's JT Miller, who continues to go through his struggles, and his ice time was a little bit shortened today. We didn't see him on power play one. We saw that mistake on the third Kyle Connor goal, where he just misses his assignment, isn't checking behind him to see that Connor is sneaking through and being able to get through for that breakaway. It's becoming a storyline that we've heard far too often this year with JT Miller. And in the second half, it's going to be a lot like the first half, a lot of these inconsistent performances if the Canucks star players don't wake up out of this half season that they've had.
Well, on JT Miller, 14-37 tonight. He had 13-22 in a winning game against the Toronto Maple Leafs. You can spread out the love a little bit in a game like that. That's how you can justify it in a 3-0 win. But in a 6-1 loss where you're looking for offense, 14-37 is something that I'm sure a lot of folks, including myself, are going to highlight on the sheet and say, all right, when your high-skill guys is not seeing ice. Even before that 3-0 goal reach, there were a couple of mistakes in the defensive zone by Miller. There was a giveaway that led to a Tyler Myers block in tight, and once again it was that pass to the middle of the ice where there's no player. It's a high risk play in your own zone, and we've seen it a few times in the last week from JT Miller. There was another giveaway later on that led to a sustained zone time for Winnipeg and another chance. So not the tidiest play in his own zone. And listen, when he's scoring, you can justify it to a certain extent, but if you're a low event team and you're not able to generate a shot or that many chances, you're going to need to really limit the damage you do in your own zone. And I think with JT, whether that's an injury, whether it's just he's not in form right now, we're seeing him struggle in the last little stretch here. And I think tonight wasn't a clear example where even before that 1-0 goal, there's a couple of high-risk plays in his own zone, and you could see that, okay, maybe the confidence or maybe the old gunslinger mentality is playing out here. But it wasn't only him. It was, you know, you mentioned Pettersson didn't have an impact tonight, even though that line was still intact. It's still kind of loading up with that top line. It felt like Winnipeg's top line, they could go against anybody. They're more than happy, you know, going head-to-head against Petey. I think most of it was Lowry, but whether it was JT Miller's line, whether it was everybody got scored on by that line at some point in time. And, you know, I thought the top six didn't have an impact. And really, the other line for the Winnipeg Jets, they were able to, A, score. And the Oilers line, too, I thought, you know, they were able to draw penalties. And that's unfortunate for Vancouver because it's coming off that game against Toronto where you said, all right, if you have Quinn Hughes, if you have Elias Pettersson on the ice together, if you load up, they'll be able to win their matchups. Unfortunately, that didn't happen at all tonight.
Well, the Canucks' success goes hand in hand with their best players playing great, right? Like, I know that 4-point game from JT led to an overtime loss, but they should have won that game, right? Pettersson had that great defensive display against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and they won that game. Tonight, you know, you talk about both those guys. And for Pettersson, you know, we're all, you know, kind of waiting for him to really take off, and he's had some performances like we had just mentioned, the one on Saturday, but tonight takes a bit of a step back again, and it very much does mirror where this team is at, where it looks like they're taking a step forward only to slide right back again. And it's really difficult to predict if this team is going to turn the corner at this stage. Same thing for players like Elias Pettersson and JT. Like, they'll give us a good game here and there, but they can't string them together. And that's exactly the same thing this team is also dealing with as a club.
Well, boys, this is crunch time. We've talked about it before where, hey, you don't have an ideal start to the season, but you're still hanging around that wild card too. Officially, as of right now, they're outside of it because Calgary, you know, has one more point than them. But the Kings, the Oilers, the Sabres, who have beaten them this season already, and I know the Sabres aren't a good team, but still, as we've seen multiple times this year, whether it's a Buffalo team, whether it's a Nashville team, if you give a team, you take them for granted, they can humble you real quick. You've got Washington on the schedule again. You've got Edmonton a couple of times. So these games are coming in very quickly, key divisional matchups, and there's no, you know, easy games coming up here. The start of the season for Vancouver from a schedule perspective was easier than we're going to see in the next, you know, 2 to 3 weeks, basically in the lead up to the Four Nations face-off. So that, you know, one game you bring it, one game you don't. The Canucks don't have that luxury where they haven't built up that cushion. They're going to be fighting with potentially Calgary, with potentially the St. Louis Blues, maybe even Utah. So they do have to figure it out. The excuse of health, as of right now, other than Dakota Joshua, this is a fully healthy team. If you're able to hit the ice, that means you're healthy enough. So it's go time right now. Filip Hronek gets back tonight. They get humbled. But the next game, you got the LA Kings, which is one of the hottest teams in the NHL going back to the beginning of December. They're being able to, you know, play very good defensive hockey. You better get, you know, going pretty quick here because it's January already, boys. Like, you know, this is the time to collect points. It's going to – a lot of games coming in before the Four Nations face-off, and a lot of games are going to be packed in after that tournament. And this is where the Canucks have to make sure that they hang around the playoff race and really make strides, because if they are going to be healthy here for the next little bit, you can't predict tomorrow. Injuries can happen anytime. You got to run with it and accumulate points.
As for Filip Hronek, I mean, not exactly the best game to assess the star Canucks defenseman in his return to the lineup, but what did you see from Filip Hronek coming back in here?
Well, going back to our pregame chat, we hit the over, I guess, on 20 and a half, so 20-50 is what he played. Beyond that, you know, I thought, you know, it was a kind of a low-key game from him. We weren't able to really see the puck moving, to be fair. Vancouver struggled a lot in that regard. Overall, a little bit of balance on that back end in terms of time on ice. You had players slot into more natural places, Tyler Myers in that 20-minute range. Anytime, you know, you're a negative, and I thought the entire team struggled tonight. So it's, you know, it's tough to really be too critical about Filip Hronek. He's going to have his ice time elevated a little bit over the next few games here. When you're chasing the game that much, at that point, even, you know, the minutes scaled back for Quinn Hughes was a little bit more balanced. So I thought, you know, this was a tough game to assess him on because, A, you're trying to get that conditioning. You're trying to shake off the rust. But when you're down three zip, after the first period, it just feels like everybody on this team is chasing. Everybody looks a little bit out of sorts. So I thought, you know, Filip Hronek, to me, he looked all right, but this was a tough one to assess his game at just because it felt like the Canucks were chasing and a bit scattered from every man on the ice pretty much after that 1-0 goal.
Final one before we let you go. Nils Höglander gets one goal, his first goal in 35 games. And unfortunately, there's only room for one miracle tonight, so we don't get two with the Canucks coming back in this one. Could this finally be what gets this kid going here?
I think at the very least, guys, when you go 20 games, when you go, you know, 30, 35 like he did, this is a situation where you feel like you can never score again. So to not only beat the best goaltender in the world, you go with a seeing eye shot, that's going to give him confidence to say, hey, I can do this again. There is some confidence there. That's probably the only positive story to come out of this game tonight. You know, with Höglander, I don't know that this is going to mean he's going to be a top six player, but at the very least, you're not feeling like every chance that goes awry is, you know, the reason you may be out of the lineup, or, you know, you're squeezing the stick a little bit more. Now he's got that goal. I thought his attacks down the right-hand side early on in this game, he had a chance. As I mentioned earlier, Neil Pionk took away that shooting angle. He got down low, and Höglander wasn't able to finish off that chance. There was a couple other attacks during the right along the right-hand side. He was playing with speed, but, you know, hopefully this means more confidence for him. But his ice time, sub 10 again, he cashes in late there. But for a coach right now that needs his players to play with energy, Höglander's one of those guys that can bring it, but he's got to bring that trust along with it. So it's a step in the right direction, but like the Canucks, you got to follow this up with another effort where you're, A, dangerous, you're, you know, strong in your own defensive zone as well, you're good in puck management, that the coach can trust you. So it's kind of the story of this team. You have, you know, a positive aspect to your game. Well, you got to continue it, right? It can't be a one and done. It can't be like the Vancouver Canucks beat the Toronto Maple Leafs. They play really solid, and then this happens tonight. I think with Höglander as well, you just got to build. You got to build confidence in your game.
Yeah, and we'll see if he's able to do that. Randeep, great stuff as always, man. Good stuff calling a 6-1 stinker between the Canucks and Jets from Winnipeg, and we look forward to chatting with you again on Thursday when the Canucks are back home to take on the LA Kings.
Boys, my theory on the final road trip, the final game on the road trip is, you know, players start thinking about coming back home, dealing with the kids, buying groceries and all that. So chalk it up to maybe responsibilities. I don't know. But this was a tough one. And hopefully there's some good conversation on post-game show. I'm sure people are fired up after tonight's game.
Yeah, well, there is that one Earls in Winnipeg. Who knows?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Shane O'Brien told us. I don't know. What do you want from me?
It was either that or what was the other thing? Remember that one time the Canucks, the one night in Winnipeg when they actually won
yes,
in Winnipeg?
The one night in Winnipeg.
One night in Winnipeg. Yeah, I think I've heard that before. Hey, good stuff, man. We'll chat again soon, Randy.
Cheers, boys. Take care.
And that is your game review with Randy, brought to you by BC Honda dealers. Love a good save, then you'll love the all-new, all-electric Honda Prologue EV. Score up to $8,000 in combined rebates. Visit bchonda.ca. And I think people are just sick and tired of the excuses as well. You know, last game of a road trip, or this or that or whatever. It's It's more about consistency of effort, and that's kind of been lacking, right? We have a lot of reaction on text inbox, 650, 650. We'll get to the phone boards coming up in a few moments as well. 604-280-0650, your toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. David Langley says, Lankinen should not have started tonight. Bad coaching decision and no timeout after two or three goals. Tockett needs to stop thinking he's Phil Jackson on the Lakers. You remember Phil was would like sit out, you know, let teams figure it out themselves. The thing I would say about Lankinen, had the shutout, right? I have no issue with him starting the game here. As far as the timeout goes, so after the 3-0 goal, it was a hat trick and it was a lengthy delay because they were cleaning the hats off the ice. Do you need to call a timeout when there's a, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like you kind of get a built-in timeout right there.
Regardless, right? You're down 2-0. That's usually not, especially with how it happened. It was 1-0. There was a, you know, a few minutes before the second goal happened. I don't know. I have criticisms for Tockett. I'm not sure the timeout one here applies necessarily. I do agree with maybe pulling Lankinen just to kind of change things up when you give up the fourth goal so early in the second period. But I think people need to stop assuming or believing in the magical powers of timeouts. Like, they're not magic cards used in Pokemon.
No.
You take it out and all of a sudden you win whatever you do. I don't know what Pokemon is. Like, you duel or whatever it is. But, like, it doesn't have magical powers, right?
No.
Like, it's not going to turn things around. And I'm with you using everything within your power sometimes to slow things down. But I don't know if a game like this, the magical powers of the timeout would have made a difference.
It doesn't give your team the juice that it needs to turn around a bad start. And as you mentioned, you know, a lot of times in games, whether it's, you know, cleaning up the hats after a hat trick goal, a commercial break acts as a timeout for coaches. And when the Canucks were going through that, they were right in the middle of the first period. So, you know, a commercial break is around the corner. You're going to get a built-in timeout with the commercial break coming anyhow. So, you know, I agree. The timeout isn't something that's a fix-all for the roster when they are really playing like they got their heads up their you-know-whats. It's to a point where the players also have to figure it out. Could the coach do something to change it up? Could he have pulled Lankinen? I mean, look, there's a lot of questions I have about that. Maybe after the 4-0 goal, that's the moment, right, that you would potentially make that change coming out of the first period, and he gives up a softy, or what I looked at as a bit of a soft goal, and it really deflates the team. But at that point, you're down 4-0 to the best team in the league. Not that you're saying, hey, we're just chalking this one up as an L, but do I want to put Demko in cold after he's had back spasms, after he's working his way back from this weird injury that nobody really knows a lot about? I could see why they erred on the side of caution and just said, let's play this out rather than putting Demko at risk, and we'll get him in the net on Thursday. I mean, there's arguments both ways, but I can see why they didn't put Demko in.
Yeah, and we can talk about that more as the show goes on here. A lot of reaction on text inbox. We'll get to the phone boards in a second. I'll start things off, then you read a few here each. But Franco and Burnaby says, let's call a spade a spade. This team is not good enough. The core is not good enough. Sell, baby, sell. And we're getting a lot of that. Like, it's time to sell already from Canucks fans to text inbox.
Sell it off. Trade deadline is still a couple of months away, though, so there is time to figure this out. This one unsigned. Glad the Canucks got their full roster back tonight. Too bad it's the same players.
Jokes for 60 coming in. I see.
There's a lot that are starting to point at the coach as well. Lucas from Maple Ridge. Time for a coaching change, in my opinion. Sometimes something doesn't seem right with the talent on this roster and the inability to put together any consistency. Rutherford did it in Pittsburgh when he brought in Sullivan, and it turned the Penguins around. We have seen that mid-season coaching change turn into a Stanley Cup win on a couple of occasions. It happened twice in Pittsburgh, once with Dan Bylsma, and then again with Mike Sullivan later on. And then, of course, more recently with Craig Berube in St. Louis. I don't think Rick Tockett is the problem, but this team has to start figuring out ways to be more consistent than they have been through the first 43 games of the year.
Oh, there's a lot of room for improvement. Bernie from Kelowna says, embarrassing doesn't even begin to describe how they got schooled tonight. And a lot of similar thoughts in the text inbox. We'll get to more of it here as the show goes on. But let's go to the phone boards as well. And let's start things off in Coquitlam, where we have Paul on the line. Paul, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here after a 6-1 loss in Winnipeg for the Canucks?
Hey, guys. Man, where to start? So tonight, it didn't even look like Vancouver was in the same league as the Jets. Mm-hmm. Like when it was 2-0, 3-0, like I honestly didn't really get too upset because whatever, it was obvious that they were going to lose. It was just a matter of how much. I mean, Winnipeg was just toying with the Canucks tonight. It was like Gretzky and the Oilers used to utterly humiliate them in the 80s. This game easily could have been 10-1, 12-1. They had so many grade A opportunities throughout the game. But the thing that's becoming like really obvious to me, and I think is really concerning, is that once again, in my opinion, the Canucks showed absolutely no passion or hunger and actually like no character. Like at the end there, what is 5 minutes left, I think, the Canucks are down 6-1 and Logan Stanley crushes Lekkerimäki against the boards. The kid's 20 years old and 100 pounds smaller than Stanley. And like nobody, none of his teammates did so much as shoot Stanley a dirty look. I mean, that just strikes me. I mean, that's embarrassing, actually. And it just strikes me as a team that's just going through the motions and maybe doesn't even really care about playing hockey in a dignified manner. So I know people are calling about, you know, Tocchet's making bad decisions stuff. Tocchet is not the problem. He is not the problem. He is a good coach. The players are the problem, and that is completely obvious, at least to me. And I think Alvin needs to make at least one or two major decisions just to shake up the team. So that's it, guys.
Hey, Paul, thanks for your thoughts. Supporting the head coach but wants to see changes. We'll talk about that as the show goes on as well. Potential changes, what is management going to be up to? And there are a lot of thoughts on the trade aspect and fans giving their opinions on what the Canucks should be looking to do in the trade market. And we'll get to that coming up in a second. 604-280-0650, your toll-free 1-888-275-0650. Let's take one more phone call here as well. And we'll hit the break and come back and take more of your thoughts, and we'll hear from the head coach as well. But let's go to Abbotsford, where we have Jonathan on the line. Jonathan, thanks for calling in. Now, what are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, guys. My thoughts are really around kind of how, you know, there's two thoughts. First of all, I think the whole Miller-Petey distraction over the last couple of months, I think it's taken away from, you know, our view of maybe more holistically the team chemistry. I'm just noticing that, you know, I think when we look to acquire players, we look to acquire guys that can play up and down the lineup. But I think that if we go too far in that direction, that we might miss people that are players that have like specific giftings in specific roles. I think with the Jets, you get guys that are like, this guy is your one right wing, this guy is your two right wing, and down the lineup, you can really pin where that player fits. We've got a lot of guys that were like, we're super versatile, but they go up and down the lineup, and you don't have that locked line combinations. You see Tocchet trying a whole bunch of stuff, you know, guys moving all over the place. And I think that, you know, that can be hard on a coach. Like I don't fault Tocchet and his group, because I think they're looking for roles for those players to kind of give them that permanency. But like, truth be told, it can be hard. And I think all of being in management has to take a good look at, you know, what are these players really, and where can we let them sit and kind of marinate for a while? So those are my thoughts, you know?
Yeah, and they're good thoughts, Jonathan. Thanks for calling in and call back anytime. And that's kind of the issue when you have a bunch of guys. And it's good to have. It's good for depth to have players who are, to his point, up and down the lineup guys. They're quoted as being named middle six players, right? But that sometimes means you're probably too good to just be a third liner, but not good enough to stay up in your top six. It's good to have. But those guys are 15 to 20 goal guys, which means you're spending anywhere from 60 to 65 games a year not scoring. And it's not like you can sequence the scoring and say, well, for these 20 games, this guy's hot. Then this guy gets hot. And that's not how these guys are, right? And ultimately, as much as we could talk about, they need some players like that, right? Guys that maybe play up your lineup a bit more. But if Pettersson plays a big game, or if Miller plays a big game, and your big-time dogs go out there and play like 30-plus goal scorers and impact a game that way, are we having that conversation?
They're not generating enough. It for as much as you can look at, hey, they're not getting enough out of Danton Heinen. Hey, they're not, like, Nils Höglander, only 3 goals on the year. Like, yeah, good, he scored tonight, but where's he been for the rest of the year? He scored 24 last year. I mean, yeah, you need some depth scoring. You need some of those supplementary guys to supplement the offense. but the primary offense has to be the primary offense, and they haven't been at all this year. Again, what was it, one shot between them two tonight?
Yeah.
Between Pettersson and Miller? How many times has that happened this season?
Too many times.
Too many times. Even if it's happened twice, that's too many times.
Okay, correction. Three shots between them. They got a couple of late ones. JT
Miller
had two,
got a couple of late shots.
And,
yeah.
And Pettersson had one. So three shots on goal between them.
Either way, like, end of the day, like, you could talk about this offense as much as you want. And, like, hey, you could do some different things systems-wise. And I've seen a bunch of texts that are coming in and being like, Tockett sucked the life out of this team with his defensive style. It's just like, I don't know. Was that the case when they were one of the highest scoring teams for the first 50 games last year? Rick Tockett was the coach then.
It's fair, but at the same time, the league has adjusted to the Canucks. Have the Canucks readjusted to the league?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Elias Pettersson through the first half of his career, why didn't they adjust to him then? Why didn't they adjust to JT Miller as a 100-point player last year? Or the fact that he's been a top 10, top 15 scorer in the league since he joined the Vancouver Canucks, no matter who the coach was? You need your best players to be your best players, and they haven't been. You need the drivers of the offense to actually drive the offense. This isn't a Tesla. It's not driving itself.
And even if it does drive, well, you know what? I'm not going to get into that conversation. Bob and Victoria says, start promoting the trades, guys. And we'll get to that, you know, as we go on. Reach is fired up. We'll see what else we can prod him with so he can get ranting and raving about how the Canucks are struggling so far this season. Keep getting your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. Or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And we'll hear the thoughts of the Canucks head coach as well. And this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. It's Sat and Reach. Canucks lose 6-1 in Winnipeg. More of the show coming up next on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Big Nizar. Have your say and join me on the People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets. Weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
By Quinn Hughes, who got it ahead to Pugh Suter, and he'll flip it out to center and peel off on a line change. Jets dump it in again. Lankinen out of the goal. Fires it around the far boards. It's standing in front. Kyle Connor scores! Lankinen turned it over in the far corner and couldn't get back to his crease in time as Vilardi found Connor all alone in front, and the Jets lead 1-0.
And this comes down to a little bit of miscommunication with his own defenseman as Lankin is playing the puck. Filip Hronek comes behind the net and just collides enough with Kevin Lankin and along with Mark Scheifele just to slow down the Canucks goaltender, and he can't get back into his crease to make the save. So first he gives away the puck, and then just that delay in getting back into the blue paint gives Winnipeg that goal.
First goal of the game for Kyle Connor goes on to score a hat trick in a 6-1 win over the Vancouver Canucks in Winnipeg. And this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. And we have a lot of reaction on the text inbox and the phone boards. And we are going to get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach coming up in a few moments as well. Nils Höglander scoring the only goal for the Canucks, but a very rough evening for the team on the road. A lot of reaction. Danny Maple Ridge says people were doing somersaults on Saturday or Pettersson's defensive performance. It seems like they're grasping at anything this guy may do to justify his contract. It's time to wake up and stop giving this guy a free pass. That's Dan in Maple Ridge. The free pass stuff gets me, because is there a player who's been talked about more by fans and media and criticized more this year than Elias Pettersson?
No.
I think what's been different is everybody has criticized Pettersson. Some have said he's trash and is not worth the money. Some have said that they're losing faith. Some say don't trade him. Some say trade him. But everybody has been in agreement that he hasn't been good enough and he needs to be better. So I don't get this whole free pass thing, because literally he's being talked about more than anybody, as you would expect when a player of his caliber and salary is underperforming. But
I think well, the general manager called out his play.
I think we're well past the whole free pass. I don't think anybody's getting a free pass. Like JT Miller, we'll get into that a bit later. Yeah. And we all know JT's been dealing with something, had a 10-game leave of absence. But does that justify the ups and downs on the ice? Ultimately, he's playing. And it's hard for us to gauge where he's at, you know, mentally, potentially, because they haven't given us any information, not that they have to, about the circumstances and the nature of his absence. But if it is indeed dealing with things, you know, mentally, then it's hard to judge where he's at and yeah. and how he can improve and where he's going to be game in, game out. But I think at this stage, game 43 just passed, nobody in this organization, no player, no coach, and no manager is getting a free pass at this stage.
No, there's criticism to go around everywhere. And so much of this gets solved if Miller and Pettersson start to play to their potential, as I just ranted about prior to the break. You know, they need these guys to be better. Whatever is going on with JT, like last year, he was on all the time. He was engaged on the defensive side of the puck and offensively in a good way. He channeled his emotions, which were so critiqued in years past, and it drove positivity amongst the team. He channeled his emotions to helping the team through tough moments during the year into being a bigger leader on the roster last year. It's not been the case this year. He hasn't been able to channel those emotions into a positive direction, and it's not helped the team at times. With Pettersson, I mean, you need a lot more out of this player. Like, he's got 10 goals. He's one of the five highest paid players in the league. It's very obvious to everybody. There's no world where Pettersson gets mentioned in trade rumors if he's playing anywhere near his potential, because that's generally not a player that gets traded in the National Hockey League. So to say he's been given a free pass, I agree. I'm not on the same page, because the criticism, at times it's reached a boiling point, and it might reach a point that, yeah, the Canucks end up moving one of these players given all the speculation around them, because they need more out of them, and right now they're not finding a way to get that.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to your star players, and you need it consistently, not just one game every once in a while, right?
Like, I mean, Quinn's been exceptional all year long.
Well, there's a difference between a guy who's won a Norris Trophy and is in the discussion for the Hart Trophy and guys that aren't.
Yeah.
Right, and I think that's pretty evident, you know, in what we've seen so far this season. Let's take a couple phone calls before we get to the head coach. Let's go to Richmond, where we have Sam on the line. Sam, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, Seth, how are you? Hey, Dan.
Hey, we're doing good.
Hey, Sam.
Dan's sounding like Marcello Lippi right before the World Cup, getting his players.
Hey, that's the greatest coach of all time right there, Marcello Lippi.
He is. Forza Italia. What I just wanted to say is that there's a couple people. Yes, the core is to blame 100%. I think all three of them need a fresh start, and they all need to go. But I'm more on, and I've called them before, this is on management. They thought this team was going to be a good enough team to compete. Well, they're not. They're terrible. The defensive structure is, besides using Hronek, the rest are just average. I'm just getting really tired of just, and I guess the excuses of either it's a road trip or whatever. Anyhow, I'm just really tired. I really think that Tocchet should have taken Lankinen out of the game. I think it's kind of a jerk move to leave him in there when you're 7 goals. I think that's really bad. But other than that, they need a change. And I don't really want to start talking about the draft lottery simulator, but I guess if we have to. But yeah, anyhow, thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. I don't know about the draft lottery simulator. I don't know if I have that energy right now, to be honest with you. But we'll see how the season goes. We'll see how the season goes, Reach, because far be it from us to not give the people what they want. The silver lining here is the Calgary Flames lost tonight against the St. Louis Blues, right?
Yep. Calgary Flames lost. Vegas lost.
Now, I mean, yeah, Vegas, who cares? I mean, not catching Vegas. But at least the Flames, who are 1 point up on the Canucks with the same amount of games played, lost tonight. So they didn't lose ground against the LA Kings and the Calgary Flames in the playoff race, so to speak, right? But I think that's part of where this Canucks team finds itself now, like being in that wild card race. And that's what Frank Nanaimo says. I'm sorry, gentlemen, that was embarrassing. I knew it was coming after the game of Toronto because it was on national TV. Major changes have to be made. I'm sorry we were talking about what they were doing, but wild card on Saturday, now we're looking like a team that should be thinking about the draft. And others saying the wild card is the best they can hope for at this time. Robbie and Burnaby is saying the same thing. And they're very much in a wild card race right now. It's not about the division. It's not about finishing high in the standings. It's literally, can the Canucks make the postseason? That's where the conversation has turned.
The second half of the season is about, solidifying your spot in the Western Conference playoffs. But can you find, never mind where you end up seeding-wise in the standings, can you find your groove? Can you find a way of playing? Can you find your identity to a level that you are playing well going into the postseason, where you hit a good stretch of play just as the postseason is coming around? You could use some help at the trade deadline on defense and probably in the forward group if we're being completely honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, look, there's no player they're going to acquire at the deadline that's going to be better than JT Miller, better than Elias Pettersson. They still need those guys to get going and bring in players that can help the overall of the roster do what it needs to do to win games more consistently. But I still think this ultimately comes down to them finding it within this group more like they had it last year than anything we've seen so far this season.
We'll talk about the trade stuff in the next segment too, because we have a lot to get to here. And, you know, obviously the focus is on this game. But I do wonder at some point, even if there is a trade you're going to lose, if they feel like they have to do it for the greater good.
Yeah.
Now, we'll talk about that coming up in a little bit. Let's continue on the phone boards. Let's go to Victoria, where we have Steve on the line. Steve, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
I think it's time to face facts, and I think our expectations are maybe too high, because last year the Canucks caught a remarkable wave of being healthy, great goaltending. Quinn Hughes became a superstar. We had balanced scoring. And we had an unsustainable pace of goals scored as a percentage of scoring chances. And that statistic, I think, is huge. And this year, the pendulum of all those favorable circumstances, like Quinn Hughes is still a superstar, but the pendulum of favorable circumstances has kind of gone in the opposite direction. So I think last year we were sort of on a real wave over our heads. This year, all these things have gone wrong. And it's hard to point a finger at one thing that's gone wrong, but so many things have gone wrong. I think we don't have enough grit on the back end for one thing. I think we missed Zadorov and Cole. I'd ask Mittler to waive his no trade contract. I don't think we've got enough grit. The Los Angeles Kings are coming to town on Thursday night, and Tanner Janot's going to be in the lineup. Is anybody going to do anything about the Besser hit? Like, who's going to do something? I don't want Mittler getting hurt. I know that's a lot. I'm just going to hang up, and you guys can answer any of it if you like. But thanks for the time.
Hey, thanks for the phone call, Steve. I can hear your frustration, and I get it, man. Hang in there. But, you know, we'll hit the Janot thing, and it's a good point by him because, you know, Daniel Harnais kind of brought up the idea of, you know, we have to play him hard, and we'll play him again. Is this team tough enough? And I think sometimes those things can be overrated when we talk about toughness when it comes to response or whatnot. But the Canucks certainly haven't shown enough grit this year as far as fighting back. Forget the physical toughness, the mental toughness in games like we've seen. Yeah. That's kind of been waning. And he makes a good point, a lot of ups and downs. But as far as a response goes, what do you expect against the Kings?
I don't know what to expect. You're not going to see JT Miller do it, I don't think. Somebody has to,
like, it's on a guy like Juulsen or Desharnais, really.
Yeah, you've got to challenge Janot after the hit on Besser. I know he served his suspension, but even tonight, you know, we already had a call about the Stanley hit on Lekkerimäki, and that wasn't challenged in the third period. You know, the Winnipeg Jets sent out their number one power play unit in the third period and scored a goal. I too want to see some kind of response. Like, if you're not going to push back on the ice, then I do want to see some level of pride shown by, hey, go out there and throw a big hit on one of their stars. You can't just go meekly into the night and quietly allow this Western Conference opponent to just beat you to a bloody pulp. You know, show something. Yeah. And the Canucks showed none of that tonight. And as I said earlier, they played like a team that had one foot on the plane once, you know, the first period got a little bit out of hand.
Gabe from Coquitlam says, this brother is spitting facts about Steve's phone call. Steve and Victoria calling in. Let's go back to the phone boards, and let's go to North Van, where we have Stu on the line. Stu, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight, man, after a 6-1 loss?
Gentlemen, thank you for taking my call as always. And I mean, you know, when I was when I called in and your producer asked what I wanted to talk about, I just kind of said, you know, very matter of fact, like, once again, we have to discuss, is this the worst game of the season? And legitimately, I feel like we've said this, what, 10, a dozen times? Like, it's insane. And, you know, I'm sure we all know that Simpsons episode where Lisa ruins Homer's barbecue and the pig's flying in the sky, and he's like, you know, it's so good, it's just a little airborne. That's been us as Canuck fans with this team. Oh, it's just 20 games, it's still good, it's just 30 games, we're fine, it's just 40. At what point do we have to say, this is enough, this is ridiculous? And the blame is all outside of Quinn Hughes and Lankinen, because he's held his weight. I know tonight was ugly, but he's held his weight. Outside of those two guys, the accountability and blame is from Hoglander up to Aquilini, and we can talk about the management and how they completely butchered and mishandled the defensive line and just how our blue line looks going forward. It sucked that we lost Zadorov and Cole. You know, if we could have mitigated and kept at least one of them, Ian Cole being the cheaper contract would have been so nice to have right now. I mean, in a game like tonight, mm-hmm. you know, if we had Gretzky and Lemieux and Yager and Ovechkin, what does it take for us to actually perform? And what sucks so much is that when you look at our roster, you think, wow, these are players that the other 31 teams would kill to have. And yet when you look at our stats this year, I mean, I can't even look at the Canucks stat page anymore, because it makes me sick when I see the goals scored by, we all know who the two players are that we're all talking about. I mean, we can pretend like the pink elephant in the room's not there, but it's there. And it's just insane to see that on a night where, yeah, Winnipeg's a fantastic team and they're probably going to make a little run this year, to see us come out and lay such a dud when, outside of Dakota Joshua, this is the healthiest we have been all year. It was insane. And it really has me wondering at this point going forward, because, hey, if we made the playoffs, we would play the Jets, and that would be a bouncing four. So for me, the rest of these 38 or 39 games, this is a tryout period for these guys to figure out, hey, do you want to play on this team? It should be a privilege to play professional sports. It should be a privilege to play in the NHL, especially in the Canadian market. And it is so sad to see guys, and there's at least, I mean, you know, we got passengers. You got half the team just cashing paychecks right now. And it sucks to see as a fan. And I know I'm not the only one who has this sentiment, and I just really want to see big change. Honestly, outside of Hughes, everyone should be on the table to move. I'm sick of this. This is absurd.
All right. Thanks for the phone.
You know, I'm getting a little bit emotional, so I'm going to hang up. I'll let you guys finish me off.
All right. Thanks for the phone call. That is Stu in North Van, frustrated, wants big changes, and we'll see if the team makes any of these big changes coming up soon. All right. Listen, we have the head coach's comments ready. Let's get to the head coach here coming up in a second. We'll get to more of your thoughts on the other side, plus a lot more when it comes to what's next for this Vancouver Canucks team. But Rick Tocchet is ready at the podium, brought to you by Tile Town.
Start of the game, a tone setter that was just too hard to overcome for you?
Yeah, the three major blunders, right? I didn't actually mind our first, but the three mistakes in the net. It's a good hockey club over there, and then obviously everybody on our team had a tough night.
We were talking about consistency yesterday. Yeah. Today, how do you process this one to try to move the ball forward?
Well, it's hard to be consistent, right? It's hard to do the right things all the time. It's hard. It's hard to go through people. It's hard to serve properly. It's hard to reload properly. It's hard to get the pucks out when we need to. It's hard to take pucks to the net. And you can't do it once in a while if you want to be a good team. That's really that's what it is.
Your team was able to do that last season, Rick. Do you think you can get them committed to do it again this season?
Yeah, I mean, it's my job. I got to get some guys committed. It's on me.
Frustrating, is it? to go back on the field with just 4 points out of the 10?
Yeah, like I said, I didn't mind the start. We had some pucks. We're getting pucks deflected. We got people like, you know, take the puck to the interior. We're just missing early, and then all of a sudden, bang, bang, miscommunication. We don't reload properly. And then, you know, obviously the last half of the game, a little bit of fumbling around. But, yeah, it's a good hockey team. They skate well. That's a fast team.
How did Hironik look after 7 weeks off?
Yeah, I thought he was fine. I mean, it's tough to be out for 2 months, and so he was fine.
A couple tweaks on the power play with Lekkomäki up there. What was the reasoning behind that?
Yeah, I mean, he's got a good shot. See if we can get something going. Actually, we had some good movement there. Actually, both the units, we just can't get the puck to the net quick enough. We're just too slow. You know, we got to take a page out of Winnipeg. One pass, beat pressure, they attack. We got to start doing that.
From vision to reality, Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. That is the Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium. It says three major blunders. Everyone on the team had a tough night. Hard to be consistent and do the right things all the time. Can't do it every once in a while if you want to be a good team. And he took it on himself, saying it's his job to get them committed. It's on me. I do disagree with, I can't disagree with he didn't mind, you know, that's his opinion. He didn't mind the first period. I had a bigger problem with the first than he did, because you can talk about the three blunders ending up in your own net. The Canucks gave up three breakaways, and they gave up two-on-ones, like two cheap goals. Like, there was five clear big chances they gave up in the first period.
Yeah.
If you give up five every period, you're not winning a hockey game.
No.
So I didn't even like their first. Maybe it's in comparison to the rest of the game, it wasn't as bad, right, considering what they were doing. But he takes the responsibility and puts it on himself, though, saying that it's on him to get the team committed again.
The biggest takeaway I have from Rick Tocchet in that post-game availability is it's hard to be consistent. And it's hard to do the right things all the time. It's hard to go through people all the time. What he is saying right there is emblematic of how this team has played this year. And as we talked about before, coming into this game, I mentioned to you, Sat, it feels like a letdown spot for the team.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go through some of their biggest and best performances of the year. So they get spanked by New Jersey 6-0, right? Mm-hmm. Then they go on that California road trip. They win all three, culminating with a dominant win over the LA Kings in LA. And you're like, is this the turning point for the Vancouver Canucks? They come home, they get their asses handed to them, 7-3 by the Edmonton Oilers. Follow that up, really strong performance against Calgary. Miller and Pettersson both play really well.
Yeah.
Maybe they found it again. Nope. 5-2, one of the ugliest performances of the season against the New York Islanders. Do you see a pattern developing here? Because I certainly do. Fast forward a little bit later, 4-0, they spanked the defending Stanley Cup champions on home ice. Wow, this is more of what we expected to see from the Vancouver Canucks this year. Next game, 5-1 loss to the Boston Bruins on home ice. There's a pattern that's developed here, this 3-0 win over the Maple Leafs this past weekend. Follow it up, big game against Winnipeg, litmus test, measuring stick game against the best team in the league right now. 3-0 after the first period.
What is it then? Is it arrogance? Like, I don't know. I mean,
this,
like,
before Rick Tocchet came to town, this core of players had a problem with feeling like they were better than what they actually were performing on the ice.
Yeah, and I mean, they showed they can be a pretty good team last year.
They did.
But
it's hard to be consistent.
Yeah,
and this team right now, they are not finding that level of consistency. They are not doing the hard things game in and game out to win hockey games.
Yeah, and you know what? When people say, you know, when you hear that, right, and you get people talking about how they don't have faith in the core and they don't believe that this group can turn it around, I mean, they're not given a very good case.
Well, we've had a few texts that have pointed this out. You know, they've had three head coaches with this core, and they've all seemed to come to this stage of events with every single one of those head coaches. They played really well under Travis Green for one season.
Yeah.
They played really well for 50-some-odd games under Bruce Boudreau. played really well for the first 18 months of Rick Tocchet's tenure. What's happened this year? And they've shown, like, even the Toronto game wasn't necessarily a one-off. Like, defensively, they played well against Carolina, gave them less than 20 shots. Washington, same thing. So, you know, you saw some good things in the Canucks game before the 3-0 Toronto win. And that's what led me to have a little bit more confidence that they were building on something. But yeah, you go into this Winnipeg game almost feeling like, oh, you figured everything out against the Maple Leafs on Saturday. And clearly that's not the case. You still got to do the work to beat good teams in the National Hockey League consistently.
And there's still a lot of work to be done for the Vancouver Canucks in this campaign. A dreadful evening in Winnipeg, a 6-1 loss against the Jets. I keep getting your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You know, people have their jokes for 60 coming into. This one says, trade Miller for Horvat. So that's what they're looking for. Dave from Valley really liked Stu's passionate phone call. Felt like we need to discuss that a bit more. We'll get to more of your thoughts and your phone calls. That's coming up on the other side. Plus, we'll get into what the latest is on the trade market again around your Vancouver Canucks. And as a Canucks Central postgame show rolls on, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment, let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd.
And Thomas Drantz.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
This is the Canucks Central postgame show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Miller on his backhand plays to Tyler Myers out to center into the Winnipeg zone. Ripped a shot wide of the net past the glove side of Hellebuck. Myers tried to dump it behind the goal. Cycle was broken by Scheifele, though, who passes to center for Vilardi. Now ahead for Connor. In alone. On a breakaway to the forehand. He scores! It's a first period natural hat trick for Kyle Connor. And it's 3-0 Jets with 6:23 left in the first.
A natty hattie for Kyle Connor as the hats, toots, you name it, start raining down on the ice in Winnipeg.
It's hard to be consistent, right? It's hard to do the right things all the time. It's hard. It's hard to go through people. It's hard to serve properly. It's hard to reload properly. It's hard to get the pucks out when we need to. It's hard to take pucks to the net. And you can't do it once in a while if you want to be a good team. That's what it is.
Canucks still searching for consistency. Hard work is not easy. Winning is not easy. The Canucks finding that out the hard way in Winnipeg, a 6-1 loss against the Jets. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah and Dan Riccio.
The more I hear that quote from Tocchet, man, the harsher it sounds.
Yeah. Well,
it doesn't sound harsh because there's no like flashy word. There's his line in some other blowouts has been like, I don't want to call them soft, but right. You know, like, but what is he saying when he says all those things? He's essentially saying, you guys don't work hard enough. Mm-hmm. You don't do any of the things that you need to do to win hockey games. And he takes some of the blame on himself afterwards. Sure. But he's not the one that's got to be on the ice doing these things. He's saying, we're not doing what we need to do to win games because it's too hard for these guys. They don't want to do it consistently. It's hard.
And he was actually trying to be nice.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this facetiously. Like, he was legitimately trying to be nice. And he said, I have to get these guys committed, mm-hmm. which means there's a commitment issue. And he's saying the commitment issue is something that I'm taking on.
Yeah.
He's taking on their lack of commitment.
Yeah.
He was protecting them tonight. He really was. Like, it's about reading between the lines, really, mm-hmm. here. He essentially said, these guys don't work hard enough, and they're not committed enough.
Yeah.
But he didn't say it like that, and he said, hey, it's on me. He's taking some responsibility here. But if you say, I need to get somebody committed, that means they're not committed.
Yeah.
And we're sitting here game 43 of the season, and the coach is talking about commitment. Like, that's not a good thing.
No, and look, they were committed. They were bought in for the game against the Leafs. on the defensive side of the puck against Carolina. You know, they were good there, but they weren't doing the hard work to get to the front of the net to do what you have to do against a good team like Carolina to score goals, because they generated next to nothing in that game. Even with the offensive zone time they had, they weren't generating anything. The Washington game, they played well and lost. I'm not gonna crush them for that one. But again, doing it consistently has been the issue for this team.
Yeah.
He's been able to get them to buy in for one, two games. But you know what? Other teams that are pretty much 500 teams, which is what the Canucks have essentially been through the first half of the season, maybe a little bit above. You look at Ottawa's issues. They put three good games together, and they have three bad games.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the Canucks are, a team that's not fully committed, not fully bought in, even though they did it last year, to doing the things you have to do. And for as much as, yeah, that doesn't sound like a coach ripping into his team, you read between the lines on that quote from Rick Tocchet, and it says a lot to how he feels his team is playing right now.
Well, let's get to the text inbox. Beaker and Burnaby says, do you think Tocchet is obliquely telling us that the team is not buying in? They certainly don't seem like they are embracing the hard. And that's just what we were talking about.
Embrace hard. That was the name of the game this season, and they haven't done it consistently enough. Again, I pointed it out just before the break. They've followed up any of their good stretches, any of their great performances this season. You can essentially look at them on one hand through the first 43 games, but that says a lot about this team as well. And they follow it all of those games up with stinkers. Every single one.
Yeah.
It tells you that this team, you know, they feel like they've gotten over the hump. That one win cures all of their issues. And then they follow it up with a dud, because no, you can't just like live off that one win. You've got to keep doing all those things that led you to have that good performance.
Yeah, again, they got to work a lot harder than they have so far tonight, or did tonight. Joe and Smithers says, I thought he'd be more pissed. And like we were saying, I think Tocchet was trying to be as measured as possible. What else are you seeing on the text inbox, Reach?
We're seeing a lot of calls for change. Bob in Victoria wants the front office shipped out. There's a lot of talk about what we've seen out of the D-Corps, and that's on the management group, that they didn't do enough to help the D-Corps. This text from Pardeep, can you guys give your assessment of Besser's play on this road trip? Feels like he's had a less than stellar trip, and some glaring turnovers being the only memorable plays attributed to him. I mean, he did have the goal in Toronto on Saturday that kicked off the good performance on this road trip. But there is a level that we saw earlier this year from Besser that we haven't seen lately from Brock Besser. Josh from Vancouver, I've been saying this for years now. They need a Bertuzzi-type player. I thought they had the answer when Zadorov came in last year, but of course, they got rid of him. They need a player who has the ability to change the momentum of the game with his physicality. And we've heard a lot of that. There was a lot of love for the call that Stu had an impassioned call about the lack of pushback after Stanley dumped Lekkomäki in the third period, and wondering who's going to stand up to Tanner Janot on Thursday. First game between the two teams after Janot was suspended for three games for his hit on Brock Besser. They put Besser out of the lineup for six games. You know, there's a lot of what this fan base wants to see out of this team that they're not seeing right now, Sat. And some of that is retribution and pushback that they're just not seeing regularly enough.
Yeah, there hasn't been enough of that so far this year. And just in general, I think it's a team that can be a lot tougher. But, you know, ultimately, you're not scoring enough. We can get out to all the toughness stuff, but it's like if you don't start putting the puck in the net more, you're going to have problems. And this team didn't get shut out tonight, but came very close to it. And they've scored one or fewer goals in, I think, five of the last eight games. So it's a lot of problems here offensively for this Canucks team. Let's go to the phone boards again, and let's start things off in Edmonton, where we have Cameron on the line. Cameron, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Boys. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Love it. Thank you for calling in.
Tough night for the rookie lap.
Yeah.
But
you're here, man. You're gutting it out. You're gutting it out.
I appreciate it. Listen here, boys. I don't know how you guys do it. Been a fan for a long time through all the dark years and whatnot, and it was nice to have a good season last year. But, I mean, it's just – feast or famine here with the fan base and some of the calls you guys are getting. Listen, this season, it's far from over, but it's not on Tocket. It's not on management. We're not crap this year because we're deciding to play Juleson over Brännström, or we don't have enough grit, or we're missing Zadorov. The reason why we're awful this year is, unfortunately, aside from Hughes, our best players aren't our best players. And I'm a huge fan of JT and Petey, but they need to step up. I mean, I'm sure they're both suffering some injuries. I know JT came into training camp banged up and then had a leave of absence, but frankly, when we lose to teams, their best players take over, and it's not, you know, Danton Heinen's not having a great year, but he's not the difference, right? It's it's the top guns. And, you know, I really hope we don't buy at the deadline this year. Just the way, you know, our team is, we're getting healthy. We'll probably squeak into a wild card spot and see what happens in the playoffs. And I just really hope, you know, we reload for next year. See what management does in the off season. And I know management wants to upgrade the blue line. They want to at the deadline because they couldn't find the players they wanted in the off season. But I mean, the team doesn't really deserve a trade, to be honest. And I've been a big Besser fan too, but I've always kind of, even back to the COVID year, I've kind of wanted them to go in a different direction. And I do hope they sell high on him this year and can still squeak into the playoffs. And like I said, reset next year. But boys, thanks for taking my call. I'm definitely going to call in more. I didn't realize how easy it was.
There you go, man. I appreciate you. You just got a dude a rookie lap and you feel better about yourself afterwards.
Exactly. And Reach, I had a question about your espressos, man. What are you taking it? Is it straight black? And are you like, you getting a little bit of water in there for the Americano or what are we going?
No, man. Maybe sometimes in the morning I might throw a little bit of the hot water in there for an Americano, but we're going straight spros, man. We just take that quick one shot espresso, get the body going, get the blood flowing, get the spros flowing, and then it gets the body going for the rest of the day. That's it.
I love it, boys. All right. Thanks a lot. I'll try to call in this weekend, but yeah, like I said, it's not Brännström this, Brännström that, Juleson this, Zadorov that. It's those are supporting cast, right?
Yes.
It's our best players, right? 100%. And I'm trying to be realistic, but I hope we keep both of them too. I'm not in the trade PD train. You know, we need grit. Like I love a tough hockey team, and you know, you gotta see players what they're worth. JT's plays on the edge, PD doesn't, and they both have their strengths and weaknesses, but this is enough of this Brännström talk, man.
Yeah.
I like Brännström, true. You get a good stretch, but like, man, look at teams who win the cup. Our third pair could be Brisbois Juleson, but if we had a solid second pair, right, that's the difference.
Yeah.
But anyway, hope we reset, kind of squeak into the playoffs, but really reset for next year. I really don't want to spend assets this year.
Yeah, I hear you. Hey, great stuff, Cameron. Appreciate the phone call. I'll call back anytime. That's Cameron in Edmonton calling in. A good first call.
And pretty good debut.
Yeah, and you know what? And we'll get to more phone calls coming up in a moment here, more of your texts. But you know, on the JT front, let's just hit it here because, you know, it brought up the notion. And he says he doesn't want to see both guys traded and wants to have him hold on to both. But the questions come up. And, you know, Stu was calling in about big changes needing to happen. Others are texting in about big changes. And, you know, we'll get to Besser even, which you brought up and he brought up too about, does a contract extension make sense? And obviously Cameron's not a big fan of that. But on the JT front, so today the insiders, especially CJ, Chris Johnson, and Darren Dreger on various platforms, you know, kind of mentioned that it's gone quiet on the Canuck front when it comes to JT and Pettersson. But if they had to handicap, if one guy getting traded, maybe JT is more likely. And both kind of suggested that the trade market has kind of halted. Not that it was red hot anyways, but a lot of wait and see to see what teams do. What teams are waiting to see what the Canucks do with JT, because if he's truly on the market, he is the best center on the market. And usually the best players are the ones that teams are going after. So it becomes a bit of a domino effect. What's going to happen with JT? But both guys mentioned it's quiet and it might take some time to develop. So I don't think there's anything developing here on the JT front. And, you know, what we talked about now going back a few weeks on the JT and Pettersson front, and I mentioned this a couple weeks back too, that yes, of course, the Canucks know what the market is on both players. I don't think the market is nearly good enough for either player. And that's why...
Not if you're still hoping to contend this year.
Yeah, and even beyond this year to some extent too, because, like, you know, what value are you getting? That the best course of action is for them to make it work with these guys because they're not getting what they want in trade. Now, Pettersson's even less likely because of the age and all that. And if you had to choose one, JT's the older player, and you're hearing more from insiders kind of mentioning if something happens with JT, I would still be surprised to some extent, because the big thing is, are you willing to make a trade for the greater good that makes your team worse? Is that how bad things are that the Canucks feel like they have to move JT? I don't think so based on what we've heard, right? And it's clear JT's dealing with stuff, so how much of it is like, let's just work through this and see where he's at? But do you get to a point this season where the Canucks say, yeah, we're getting 70 cents on the dollar on JT, but it's just a move we have to do?
I'm not sure if you get there this season. It's a hard bridge to cross because it's not just about this season. It's, well, we've got Demko for one more year at $5 million. We've got Hughes for two more years at his current contract. How are we maximizing those 2 years? And if we trade JT Miller, how are we getting anywhere close to maximizing those 2 years? Because we're going to have a gaping hole at second line center if we're moving JT Miller. And the argument is maybe you start to get a better version of Elias Pettersson and he really starts to take the mantle, take the torch of the team and be the number one center, but you're still going to need another running mate. You're still going to need to upgrade at second line center somewhere, somehow, and those players aren't easily available, aren't made available generally on the trade market and don't really become available in free agency.
And look at the best teams in the league that would be looking to add a JT, they're not in a position where they can just take on the entire salary, which means they have to send you money back. And a team that's contending is probably not trying to trade their best players.
Yeah.
Are you at a point where you move him for the best assets and you get cap space, which means more of an off-season type of move than an in-season move? It's a hard thing to do. To trade JT or Pettersson in season and also feel like you're coming away at the on the right end of that trade. That's why ultimately I'm more skeptical than others, and things have gone more quiet on that front. And, you know, Friedman mentioned on the Fan Hockey Show today that the sentiment around the Canucks, and we didn't see it tonight, was that they put their worst behind them, and they're happy that they all this came out in public, so now we can deal with it and move on. But tonight did not look like a game where you moved on. You look like a team that's still dealing with the same issues.
Yeah, it didn't look like rock bottom had been avoided.
But here is the other, you know, again, it's hard for us to point to causality, but correlations are there that you can point to, right? But for all the talk about the JT Pettersson thing, if it did come to a head and now they're moving past it, can you even blame that for their struggles? Right? It comes back to, is that stuff probably overrated to some extent?
Yeah.
You know, but ultimately, there is something wrong here, right? There is something like that's not going the way they need it
to
go.
Well, it leads you to bigger questions of, like, can you win with these players? Ultimately, like, that's what it comes down to in the questions you're asking yourself. Like, I understand the talent of these players, but ultimately, can we build something that wins us a Stanley Cup or gets us into that conversation with these players? Last year, you felt like you had it. That's why you made the move for Lindholm to add to this group and the move for Zadorov to add to this group, because you had the mix. It worked, and it showed on the ice. This year, we haven't seen it.
No, we haven't.
We've seen it for one game here, one game there, but that's it.
Yeah, let's squeeze in one more phone call before the break. Let's go to Poco, where we have John on the line. John, thanks for calling in. Now, what are your thoughts here tonight?
Oh, hey, Dan and Seth. Thanks for taking the call. A couple different themes I wanted to touch on. First is like the offense. Is, you know, just so predictable with this team. And, you know, I know coming into the season, Rick Tocchet wanted to try to generate more off the rush. I just wonder if you look at the foot speed of this team, maybe they just, you know, outside of like, you know, DeBrusque can motor, JT when he gets going, you know, I guess maybe Heinen to a degree, but he's not really offensively gifted. But, you know, guys like Garland and that aren't really, isn't a burner, neither is Besser. Even Pettersson, like, he's a good skater, but he's not fast. So, you know, the offense always seems to be, it has to be funneled back to the point. Mm-hmm. And so many of the shots get blocked or they get tipped wide. They don't take it to the net, which is what I like to see. And that's 5-on-5. And then on the power play, you know, they need to generate more east-west chances where you get the goalie moving from post to post. Like you see, say, I know some, you know, these teams like Edmonton are ultra-talented, but the shots back to Hughes to get it through, or it goes to Pettersson on the, you know, like on the half wall, and then he cradles the puck and then tries to move in to shoot. You just sometimes got to get the puck and whip it. As far as the grit factor, you know, I know everyone points to that Washington game after Hughes was manhandled by Pierre-Luc Dubois, but and there was a good response. I agree with that, but you know, people seem to forget in that towards it was at the third period when Wilson knocked down Garland behind the net, and nobody came, nobody did anything. I mean, you can't just leave it at that. And overall, like, that's why I think, you know, if I was to criticize Alvin, I know Zadorov was asking maybe for more money, but, you know, when you look at it, I would rather have him than Forsberg and Desharnais because of what he brings to us, to the team. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't get guys like Wilson, you know, showing up the team, and Janot would probably, you know, would be facing the music too. And my last theme, and I don't want to be a pessimist, and I hope I'm wrong, but as Dan was saying, like, you know, if they contemplate trading one, probably more likely Miller, and
yeah,
you know, you don't get enough back in return, and so you probably wonder where the T's sit.
Yeah, we got to wrap this up here real quick, so I got to get up to the break. Thanks for your phone call. I get what he's trading at about being careful with trading JT. Guys would fire, and they need some more toughness. We'll get to more of your thoughts on the other side. We'll hear from Ian McIntyre and a lot more after a 6-1 loss in Winnipeg against the Jets. This is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Post-Game Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Jets have had not only the best power play, but the best home ice power play in the league this year, running just shy of 35% at home coming into the game. And they got another one. Scheifele in the slot on a one-timer set up from below the goal line to the side of the net by Nikolaj Ehlers, and it's 6-0 Winnipeg.
And this is a quick trigger by Mark Scheifele, just sitting in the slot waiting for the puck. And he's had a heck of a year. His 26th goal of the season finds the soft area. And the Canucks aren't able to deny the pass there as both Juulsen and Soucy are in that area. And Pettersson is scanning the ice but just can't get a stick there. Three Canucks are too late to get a stick in the lane. And that's just a confident finish by Mark Scheifele to make it 6-0 Winnipeg.
Canucks go on to lose 6-1 against the Jets, and this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll go back to the phone boards coming up in a moment as well. You know, people have jokes, people have trade suggestions, and sometimes they put them together. And Lotso says, can Rutherford trade PD and JT to Chicago for Bedard? Just to make a point. Lotso texting in.
Not sure Chicago's taking that one.
Have you seen how frustrated Connor Bedard is?
He's pretty frustrated.
Even, you know, yesterday he was very frustrated. It's only like year two, kid.
Yeah.
And it's not going to get any better, I don't think, with
it's gonna
the,
be,
with the
yeah, it's going to be rough for a while there in Chicago, I think.
I mean, is he going to get sick of it? Does he have any recourse?
Does Chicago, like, do anything about it until he gets anywhere close to free agency, though?
Like, we've talked about how it's really hard for the Canucks to win a Pettersson trade. I mean, I'm not saying you should trade Pettersson for Connor Bedard, but is there a world where that becomes even a possibility? I mean, I'm just saying this tongue-in-cheek, yeah, and joking around. I mean, it's what Lotso was saying. And I know things are really bad for Connor, but it just makes me wonder, like, maybe this year, I mean, they can talk him into it, right? And I think it can keep him cool. But if he's this frustrated now and they got one or two more years of this at least, like, that could come to a head.
You got a long road, man.
It could come to a
head. Like, what, 3 to 5 years before Chicago is relevant? It's going to be a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, for as much as you can't trade Elias Pettersson, and I keep saying that, well, I mean, obviously the conversation changes if you throw a Connor Bedard or Macklin Celebrini into the equation.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know the trade stuff, it is hard to get away from. And I think especially with JT right now, just because the deployment is really interesting. He was... Only Nils Höglander played fewer minutes than JT at 5-on-5.
And it wasn't something that was based just on the game. Like in the first period, JT was one of the low men in ice time too. This was a trend throughout the game. And even the other game against Toronto, everyone's like, well, maybe it was because of the lead. He had 4 and change in the first, 4 and change in the second, 4 and change in the third. So even against the Leafs, his ice time from the start of the game to the end was very consistent.
And demoted off the top power play unit in favor of Jonathan Lekkerimäki. Look, for as much as like JT has gone through struggles at other points of his career, we've talked about it. I mean, he was getting blown up on Hockey Night in Canada when things were going off the rails towards the end of Bruce Boudreau's tenure. Was he ever not playing 20 minutes a night in that time? No, like despite everything, Boudreau still kept JT out for his regular shift and put him out a ton because he felt that was going to help them win the game. With Rick Tocchet, we've seen games where his ice time was dialed back a little bit, maybe even a brief benching here and there, but we're getting to a point where consistently his ice time is down, and I think that says a lot about how much confidence the coach has in the player to help his team get out of a difficult situation. And that's not a good situation for the Canucks to be in, because if you are going to reach your potential this year, you need JT Miller to be better. But he also, like the coach has to have confidence in him to help them through difficult stretches of games, because, hey, that's why you pay him $8 million.
Yeah. It is, and it's been a really confounding year.
Yeah.
And with everything, JT may be dealing with, and again, we don't know the nature of it. It just complicates that whole idea of where is his game at? How is it going to get better? And what does progress look like? Because, they haven't even talked to us what the injuries are, so it's hard for us to gauge from the outside how these things are affecting his performance, right? And I think that's the big thing. Dave says we'll probably get shot down. Miller for Pasta. Yeah, probably. You're probably not getting David Pastrnak for JT Miller, right? And I think ultimately that's the big issue here. Like if you're trading a guy like JT in season, you're not getting another team's best player.
No.
Like you're not getting a top end player because they're trying to win by adding. And the things that, have been brought up in the past have been like Zibanejad. Mm-hmm. For JT, that type of trade, right? Like
our problem contract for your, not that I think JT is a big time problem contract. If he keeps playing like this, it will be, but it's essentially the deal is one for one because you need to make the money match.
Right. Yeah. Hunter and Brooke Quitlam. Why would Connor Bedard want to go to a loser organization and another pathetic loser organization? Stop thinking Vancouver is an attractive and appealing destination for any NHL player. It is not. That's Hunter and Brooke Quitlam.
The team he grew up supporting, so
and,
I don't know.
And he was talked about dreaming being drafted by, and he had hope the Canucks would have the first pick. And again, I think it's all in jest.
Yes.
Tongue in cheek. Having a little bit of fun with this.
The other part with Pettersson, like Pettersson was at 15-21 at 5-on-5 compared to Miller at 11-49.
It's a big difference.
Most nights, Pettersson and Miller, I haven't gone back and looked at every night, but like most nights, Pettersson and Miller were neck and neck for most 5-on-5 minutes played by Canucks forwards. To see a 4-minute difference or a nearly 4-minute difference, that's a lot of shifts.
Yeah.
At 5-on-5, that's a big discrepancy between the two players and how much they played. So definitely something there or something brewing there with JT Miller's ice time and his deployment in recent games.
Yeah. Let's take one more phone call and let's go to Maple Ridge where we have Gary on the line. Gary, thanks for hanging in there. What are your thoughts here tonight? Gary. Did we lose Gary? No, Gary. Unfortunately, Gary was not there. He was there, but not
Gary
there.
Is scary.
He was there, but not in the, he was just, he didn't show up just like the Canucks in the first period.
I miss those John Sterling, Gary Sanchez calls. They were great. Gary is scary. Gary was scared to do his hit.
Yeah, he was.
He was scared spit hot fire like some of the other callers
or,
have tonight.
Or maybe he was just so hot that it just didn't get through.
He yelled so hard into the phone that the call just dropped.
He found a wavelength that we couldn't decipher. That's how angry Gary was. Trenvis and Chilliwack says, this team is starting to give me shades of Travis Green tenure near the end. Everyone's having super safe, overthinking everything. Trying to generate chances is an absolute grind. Something needs to change. Why not at least fire Yogi? Curious to get your thoughts. I mean, poor Yogi taking it. I don't think this comes down to assistant coaches.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I really don't. And
this is like, complaining about the hitting coach on your favorite baseball team. Like, nah. Maybe the hitters just aren't that good.
Yeah. It might be a hitter problem, right?
For as much as coaches, and we talked about it again tonight, you know, Tockett essentially, he didn't say it explicitly, but calling out the commitment of his team, and he needs to do a better job of getting their commitment more consistently in games. Like, it's down to the players. You know, everybody looked at the Canucks this year and said, this is a playoff team. This is a team that can build off what they did last year. It's not necessarily a talent issue. There's a lot of talent on this Canucks roster. They're just not playing like it.
No, and you know, for the system issue stuff, Keith and the water guy says, why did they change up their system? They were so defensively responsible. They shouldn't have changed their entire system. I don't think they changed their entire system. They're trying to do some different things on the breakout. And I think, I wouldn't say they've abandoned them, but they're just not doing it anyways. But defensively, their principles haven't changed. Like, they're not, they haven't changed the way they're
defending.
Staples
are still the staples.
Yeah. And I think the biggest issue is a lot of their rush offense last year was unsustainable because they were scoring on like 30% of their rush chances or whatever it was, right? Like, they're converting at an incredible rate. So they needed to generate more rush chances, but they haven't really done that. But I think defensively, I don't think they're doing anything overly dissimilar to where what they were doing last year in their own end and coming through the neutral zone for the most part. But let's get the thoughts of the man who has been covering the Vancouver Canucks for a long time and has done a great job. I mean, always, but recently with a lot of great pieces through talking with some of the big newsmakers with the Vancouver Canucks, players, coaches, and managers. He's the man we call the triple threat. You watch him on TV, you read him on digital, you're about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
Tell you, the Winnipeg Jets look like a quadruple threat, don't they?
They certainly do. They certainly do. I mean,
I don't know what the four things are. They just looked very good.
And the
Canucks didn't. But Winnipeg has been very good for the whole year. And the Canucks, you know, they've kind of been this way the whole year. If you think about it,
they've been consistent.
This road trip has been like their season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they, you know, really daunting road trip. It's a murderer's row of elite NHL opponents lined up for them. They've got their own challenges of, apart from the travel of the guys coming back from injury and trying to get their team together. And of course, all the drama that they keep trying to put behind them, but as long as they continue to scuffle, it's not going to go away. And then you wonder when they blow that first game in Montreal, man, they might not win a game the rest of this trip. They might not win a game on this trip. They end up having this unbelievable game in Toronto. Unbelievable because no one foresaw that performance. And then they have a real dud at the end. And at the end of these five games, they go home with 4 points. And 4 points allows them to survive, allows them to stay in the race, although it doesn't keep them in a wild card spot, but it allows them to hang in there. And that's kind of what the whole season has been to this point, that they're just hanging in there. I mean, they should be a lot better. At times they look like they could be a lot worse, but they're hanging in there. But, you know, you can only hang in for so long, and either you've got to be good or you're just going to be bad. So we all know it's time. It's time. Tick tock. It's time to start being good. You know, Thatcher Demko told me last week, everybody understands you got to start stringing games together. And he said he felt like they're, you know, one good road trip or one good spell of games away from rediscovering that feeling, that confidence that they had all of last season. Well, this wasn't the road trip where they got that feeling back, and now they're going to have to keep working at it.
It felt like Rick Tockett's post game when he said, you know, why can't you get them to consistently play like they did on Saturday? And He just said it's hard. It's hard to do all those things. It's hard to go to the middle of the ice. It's hard to get pucks out of your own end. It's hard to back check. All the things that it takes that they did so consistently well last year, they haven't been able to string that together for more than maybe a couple of games at a time at points this year. And then he put it on himself that he needs to get more commitment out of the players. But in a way, in a backhanded way, he's calling out the commitment of his team to do the hard things that it takes to win games. It sounds like Tocchet is starting to lose patience with the group a little bit.
Well, I don't think he's starting, Dan. I think he's been short of patience for a while. I mean, he has said at various points, he's pointed out, as did Patrick Alvin in a conversation I had with him right after Christmas, that, you know, your best players have to be your best players. That's what this organization has basically been waiting for. They're waiting to see, is this core group of talented, in their prime players who have grown together and been together for a few years now, are they going to start to play at an elite level again, or is this the end of it? Is this the end of this core? And then, you know, there's going to be changes made, and there's been lots of talk and speculation, obviously, about JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. But, you know, what's Brock Besser's future? What's Thatcher Demko's future? I think we all know that they would love to have Quinn Hughes for his career, but, you know, they have to show that he can win a Stanley Cup here. And right now this team is not showing that. And I think they're still waiting. They're still waiting for this group. Now, part of the reason they've been patient, and I think this has been smart of management, is that they've so rarely had their full group together. And tonight was a huge good news story right up until puck drop that Filip Hronek is back, because, you know, as thin and needy as they are in the bottom four, Filip Hronek is almost as important to this team as Quinn Hughes. Might be the second most important player to this team, really, if you think about it. And so now they have him back. Now, Pettersson missed 6 games. He came back in Raleigh. Quinn missed 4 games. He came back in Montreal. Miller has been back now for, a month and a bit from his leave of absence. And they're still waiting for him to get his full game back. There's been glimpses of it, but like the team, not nearly consistent enough. And, you know, Brock has been hot and cold, as sometimes goal scorers are. But I think they've been disappointed that in times of need, that Brock hasn't been able to elevate and been a player who can drive the team rather than be a really good complementary piece when other guys are going well. And so they're waiting for this group. Now that Hronek is healthy, and, of course, Demko had his, you know, that 8 months knee injury, he came back, had his back spasm, so he missed a bunch of games. Now I don't think he's starting over per se as far as getting his game back, but it was an interruption of him trying to work his way back. So now they've got everybody available who they really need, and it's going to be up to these guys now to either do it or not. And I think this period between now and the break for the Four Nations is critical. I know this is fairly obvious, but I think it's critical to this season and what this team is going to do. But I also think it's what happens between now and the Four Nations is probably going to determine what this core is going to look like beyond this season.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's a lot of frustration, obviously, for fans and people want to see change happen. But when it comes to the players that we're talking about here, especially big core pieces that have been in all the trade talk, it's not that simple, right? Like a guy like Besser, okay, if they're going nowhere, he'd be a rental, so they definitely move him. But when it comes to JT and Pettersson, even if they want to make a change, there's no guarantee that can actually happen in season.
Well, it's difficult, and especially when you're making a seismic trade like that, it could affect the team for a decade. You can't, you know, you'd like to have as many trade options as possible, and you'd like to have as many teams at the table if you're going to make that decision to negotiate with and get your best offer. And the reality is you rarely do that in season. Doesn't mean you can't make a great trade, because somebody might really want one of those guys, not just for the remainder of these huge contracts that they're on, but might want them for this spring and these playoffs. And maybe you can leverage more that way than waiting till the off season. Unfortunately, and again, you know, let's look at Quinn Hughes and what the organization needs to show him if they want to keep him. It's hard to make that trade with a contender in season and get anything other than glorious futures, because the contender can't really afford, you know, to give you key players that they want for this season. So it's tough. It's tough to make those trades in season. But, you know, again, I think this management team has been pretty patient this year. You know, if you think about last year, the Zadorov trade happened at the end of November. The Lindholm trade happened at the end of January, or late in January. I think it was late in January, ahead of the deadline. Mm-hmm. So, and so far there hasn't been anything from Rutherford and Alvin. So they've been patient, but I don't think they're just going to stand back and watch the second half go the way the first half went. Things are going to have to get better, or there's going to be changes.
What do you make of JT Miller's deployment in these last few games? He was only Nils Höglander had fewer minutes at 5-on-5 than JT tonight. We saw that he was bumped from the top power play unit in favor of Jonathan Lekker-Mäki in a game that the Canucks trailed early. Just not the usual deployment we would see out of JT Miller.
No, but I think things changed when they decided that they were going to put Besser with Pettersson in Toronto, and that kind of really loaded up that line with DeBrusk. And now suddenly Miller's, you know, essentially second line or third, like either third plus or second minus line, essentially. But I don't find much fault with the deployment of Miller, because he hasn't been playing well enough. Like I think there's more fault when guys go out there, get thrown out there for 20 minutes if they're not, and they're not performing. And JT, look, it's as we've said before, this is a really complex situation. We don't know exactly what his leave of absence was about, but we do know, just being pragmatic and human about it, that whatever the issues are, they didn't just go away because he took 10 games off. So he's working his way through whatever he needs to work through. And I think it's difficult for him. He hasn't been the same player, and he hasn't, you know, I hesitate to say this because we don't get a glimpse behind the curtain very often, but he doesn't seem like the same guy around the team right now either that he once was. So I'm very loath to jump on JT Miller right now, because I think he's got enough stuff, probably a lot more important than hockey, going on in his life. But until he starts to be the dominant player that he can be and the impactful player that he can be, I got no problem with the coach playing him less.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm just kind of at a loss, Ian, that we were having the conversation after the game against the Leafs and how good it was and you know, how well this team was playing, and then they have this performance again here tonight. But and none of it is unexpected. You know, I'm just, it's just a really strange season, and maybe this is just the sign of a team being what they are, and that is being, you know, a glorified 500 team that's getting more than 500 because of loser points, and that's what they've shown to be for over half a season, right? And at what point are they what they are?
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm not a deliberate contrarian. I don't take an opposing view just to get attention for taking the opposing view. But I think I've got a little different view tonight about tonight's game than what a lot of people have. This was always going to be a game that was really difficult for them to win coming at the end of the road trip. The game against Toronto looked completely unwinnable. Like, that looked like a guaranteed loss game, even without their travel problems. It looked like a guaranteed loss game. They won 3-0. Now they come to Winnipeg and they fall on their faces 6-1. But I would say in the first half of the game, and I saw there was a quote from Tocchet that he didn't mind their first or he didn't mind their start, but they made 3 big mistakes. Well, Winnipeg scored on 4 of their first 9 shots. The first 2 goals were absolutely awful by Lankinen. Third one's a breakaway that Tyler Myers has caught. Fourth one in the first minute of the second period where, you know, the Canucks feel like, okay, it's 3-0, but if we get one here early, it's still a game. And it eludes Lankinen from the blue line. And now, having said all that, I'm not saying this is Kevin Lankinen's fault, but it wasn't really until the second half of the game that the Canucks got on the plane and started planning their trip home. The shots were 12-11 for Winnipeg halfway through the game. And then when Garland took that penalty, the Winnipeg power play got a bunch of shots. They didn't score, but they basically dominated. The Jets just dominated. And I think that's where I would fault the Canucks tonight, is that they kind of gave up halfway through. But the score was 4-0. But they basically put one foot on the plane halfway through the game because it was 4-0. They know they're not going to come back against the best team in the Western Conference and the best goalie in the world. And yeah, yes, it's maybe human nature to think that way, but it's not professional and it doesn't look good for the organization. So that's what I would call them. I think they played a whole bunch of games, and maybe this speaks to how uneven the season has been and how many times they've played poorly, that I think there's a whole bunch of games where they were worse and you could fault them more and be more critical than for tonight's game. Now, I know that's not the popular view out there, but that's the way I see it. That coming off of they got 2 points in Toronto that nobody expected. They got no points tonight, which was probably to be expected all along, but it would have been nice to see them hang in there and compete, even though, you know, they didn't get any saves early on and the game was over by the 22nd minute.
Yeah. And I mean, it's one of those things, right? Like, we have to see how they respond and how they respond beyond that. So we'll see what happens on Thursday, and we finally get to see you back in person again on Thursday, Ian. So I look forward to that at the very least.
Now, is Bic going to be joining us? Not that I mind Dan Riccio in the studio, in the gondola with us.
We hope Bic is going to be healthy and ready to go.
Yeah, Bic is on the mend. He is feeling better, but not quite there yet. So we're hopeful that he is good to go on Thursday. He's very much day-to-day at this stage.
All right. Well, I'll look forward to whoever's there, my radio brethren.
Yes, you got it, Ian. Thanks, as always. Appreciate your time, and I look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca, as always.
All right. Thanks, guys. See ya.
Yeah, you got it. That is Ian McIntyre, and as always, a pleasure having him here on the post-game show. That brings us to the end of the show here. A disappointing night for the Canucks, a 6-1 loss in Winnipeg against the Jets. Ian, a bit more hopeful about what might happen beyond because of how the game went, and we'll find out on Thursday, because the great thing about this job is we're back again tomorrow talking about this team, and there's always another game, and the next game's coming up on Thursday against the Kings.
Yeah, we get to have Kevin Woodley, our goalie guru, break down this Kevin Lankinen performance, and his take on why the Canucks didn't put Demko in at some point in this game.
Yeah, and we'll talk about, you know, where Lankanen's game is at as well. We'll get to that on a lot more. Thank you all for listening, participating, being part of the show. It's a pleasure as always. Special thanks to Fast Eddie Gregory. He's Dan Riccio. I'm Satyar Shah. We're both back at it again on Canucks Central tomorrow at 4. Thanks for listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.